I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. Welcome back to What It Takes. Today, we're diving into the world of law enforcement leadership with someone who truly knows what it takes to lead under pressure. Our guest is Jeff Wettinger, a retired LAPD lieutenant with over 33 years of experience. He's worked in elite units, handled high-profile security for world leaders and celebrities, and now runs Law Enforcement Consultants, where he helps police departments improve training and community relations. But Jeff's journey wasn't always easy. He overcame dyslexia and a speech impediment to rise through the ranks and become a leader in one of the country's most demanding police forces. We're going to talk about what leadership really looks like in law enforcement, the tough decisions, the lessons learned, and how those lessons apply to leadership in any field. This is going to be a fascinating conversation, so let's get into it. Welcome, Jeff.
No, thank you for having me.
So let's just jump into your law enforcement career, because that actually spans over three decades, and I think it probably leads to obviously where you are today. So what first inspired you to become a police officer?
Well, I think it has to begin back when I was first born, because I have a very unique background. My background is I was born by a teenage mother, and she put me up for adoption. I lived in a foster home for a short period of time, and I was adopted. And then my father, he was a sociologist at Kent State here in Ohio, and my parents wanted four children, each a year apart. So they went ahead and they continued with adoption, and they adopted my brother, who's Japanese. And then I have a foster sister who's Black. So I was raised in the 60s and 70s here in Ohio in the Midwest with a multiracial family. So the experiences that I have are rather unique. And it's those experiences that I took into my law enforcement career and had a different lens in which I looked at my experiences through and how I saw law enforcement. So that's really impactful relative to what I'm doing today with law enforcement consultants. What ultimately got me into law enforcement is probably make your head explode. But I was a college athlete. I played Division I college hockey on a scholarship, and it was Labor Day weekend. And one of my hockey buddies wanted to go out to a bar. So we went out to a bar, and when the bar closed, everybody was flowing out onto the sidewalk, which was not large enough to manage all the people that were flowing out to it. And we ended up on the sidewalk, out in the street, off the sidewalk. And my buddy saw this car full of girls, and to get their attention, he jumped up on the hood, propped himself and sat up on the hood. And they didn't really care for that. So she accelerated and slammed on the brakes. And when he fell off, he held on to the antenna. This was back when the antennas were on the hoods of the car, and it snapped off. Well, a police officer saw this and came and detained my buddy, handcuffed him, and put him in the backseat of the police car. So I thought, well, I better find out where they're taking him, how long it's going to take them to process him, and what it's going to cost for me to get him out of jail. So when I approached the police officer, he was very belligerent. And he, and not too many kind words, said, get back on the sidewalk or you're going to jail as well. So I did that. And when his backup officers came, he pointed to me, and the backup officers came and they addressed me very inappropriately and then proceeded to beat me, and they took me to jail. And to make the ridiculousness of all of this was that when I got to jail, I asked about the whereabouts of my buddy, and he was released. And I was booked for disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and interfering in official business. And so it was that experience that caused me to want to start taking some criminal justice classes. I thought about being an attorney. I talked to my parents' good friend, who was one of our neighbors and was a judge, and she discouraged me from becoming an attorney because she said I didn't have the academic credentials to go to a quality law school, and I would be just going to what would be kind of characterized as an attorney factory, and I'd just be one of a million attorneys. So I thought, you know what, perhaps I can impact law enforcement by being within the ranks, because ultimately I decided I wanted to be a professor of criminal justice. And my father encouraged me to go get 5 years of practical experience before I started my PhD program. And that's when I chose LAPD. So I never intended on doing 33 years in law enforcement. I was going to do 5 years, go back, get my PhD, and be a professor of criminal justice. So it's interesting how things work out.
Wow, that is a story. And I can't even imagine experiencing something like that at such a young age. I mean, everybody can kind of think back to just things that we did at, you know, in our young adult years and being in college and whatnot. But who would think that just such a pivotal moment where it's just a nothing, you're just leaving somewhere together with your buddies, your teammates, and it leads to just this life-changing, you know, kind of pinpoint moment that really changed the course of your life. And you faced other challenges as well, like learning challenges. I know that you talked about dyslexia, a speech impediment growing up. How did you overcome those obstacles to succeed? And I mean, because your goal was to be in academics, right? And in law enforcement, well, just on the legal side of things. And then it kind of turned to law enforcement. But yeah, talk about that. How did you overcome something like that? And back then too, when we didn't have the resources or the education about how to navigate through the education system with some of those challenges.
Well, the speech impediment was quite obvious. I mean, when I spoke, I couldn't say my R's. You know, I'd say Wobot and Wabbit. My name's Jeffrey Wininjaw. That's how I spoke. So my parents, it was obvious I had an issue. So I would go to speech therapy twice a week. And I did that for about 3 years. And I learned how to say my R's. Now, when it came to the dyslexia, I struggled in school. And as a result, I had some behavioral issues because I would act up in class when I would get called on to read out loud because I didn't like being laughed at because I read so poorly and people would snicker and laugh at me. So it wasn't until I was in seventh grade that I had a reading teacher that said, if you would come in to see me during the lunch hour, I'd like to put you through some testing. So I said, sure. And I came in and I took the testing and it confirmed her suspicions that I was dyslexic. And as a result, I went through some reading instruction to learn to read as a dyslexic child. And that's really changed my life. Because like you said, the resources weren't there. She did this on her own time during her lunch hour as well. And she identified an issue and took it upon herself to help me. And it did help me. I have dyslexia to the point where it's an obstacle, but it's not a barrier. I was able to overcome it, and I learned how I learn to get through school. And at the university level, I'd sit in the front row and very much engage the instructors and with questions and things. And I wasn't one of those students that could rely on reading the textbook and passing an exam. I had to actively engage, and I'm very much like that in every aspect of my life, actually.
I like how you said that. It was an obstacle, but not a barrier. And I think a lot of us, we don't really, we hit some of those roadblocks and sometimes it takes some of us out of the game, right? And I think it just sounds like you've had some really great support and sometimes some luck along the way. You just had one person that decided, hey, I'm gonna help you. And I think that's kind of what stands out to me too, is sometimes when we look at everything as a whole, we think, who am I? You know, I'm one person. How do I make a difference? And this one person decided to do something on her own time and made a huge impact in your life. You know, back when we didn't have a lot of, you know, she figured that out on her own. And so that, I think that's really cool. And you also, you've worked with elite LAPD units like the Metropolitan Division. And so you've had an opportunity to kind of see leadership in another light. And maybe because you had, you know, such great foundation of leaders, it sounds like, in your life along the way as well. But what separates great officers from average ones when it comes to leadership?
Well, you know, when it comes to leadership, my first exposure to leadership was my parents. My parents were unbelievable individuals. They were light years ahead of their time in regards to the things that they were involved in. I'm from the city of Kent, and they started the Kent Environmental Council, which is still present today. My mom was president of League of Women Voters. She was a city councilwoman. My dad was on the board of the county hospital for decades. I mean, they were very civically minded, and they had the courage to be passionate about things and make a difference. and saw things as larger than themselves. And the example that they set for me in doing that, I carried on in every aspect of my life. Now, you talk about what separates an average officer from an excellent or outstanding officer. It's really mindset. And I'll share with you, when I first went out to LA, I was hired by the LAPD and the LA County Sheriff's Department. I chose to go with the LA County Sheriff's Department initially. And when I went through the academy, I was always focused on absolutely doing my best. My folks always encouraged me, do the absolute best you can do in everything you attempt to achieve. So that was the mindset I had. So I would study for the exams. And I graduated with a 98.7 average, which was the top of the class. There was 157 in the academy class to begin with. We graduated 107, so about a third washed out throughout the training. And I graduated number one academically, number one physically, and number two in firearms proficiency. But I was mocked and teased, and because they're like, why are you putting so much time in? All you need is a 70%. My badge will say the same thing on it when I graduate than yours does. And I'm like, you know, it's kind of like having a surgeon that just gets by and passes. Is that the surgeon you want? Well, in law enforcement, it's just as critical in regards to life and death, the decisions that you'll be making in split seconds under highly stressful and rapidly unfolding tactical scenarios. So it's imperative that you have the mindset and that you bring that with you. Because listen, this is what's so challenging about law enforcement. The average academy here in the United States is 860 hours prior to a police officer having the boots on the streets. Let's put that in the context. To apply for your cosmetology license, you need nearly double that many hours of training. So, I mean, what does that tell you? That's here in the United States. You know, I've taken my research and expanded my assessments of law enforcement outside of North America. I've gone over to Europe. You look at the Nordic countries where they require, you know, like a 4-year degree. And while you're getting that degree and going through your police training, you're not assured to have a job at the end. They're assessing how well do you respond to training? Do you have the critical thinking skills? Do you have the empathy and the compassion and the problem solving skills that are characteristics I don't think anybody would argue a strong law enforcement officer is going to possess. So there are methods and means and practices that are already being implemented out there that have demonstrated to serve the public better in the selection of who and how we choose will serve in the law enforcement capacity.
So then if it sounds like the training is not, I mean, I know that it's rigorous training when it comes to what you're actually doing, but in terms of requirements, hours, all that kind of stuff, how do you get from, okay, I'm newly off the police academy and, you know, you're doing your job, but then you have elite units, right? You've got gang enforcement. You've also worked as a dignitary protection for U.S. presidents. You're in L.A., so there's celebrities there. Talk to me about, I mean, that must have required some tough decision-making in some of those scenarios. What kind of preparation or how did you navigate through some of that high-pressure leadership situations in those kinds of units?
Well, I had the fortunate opportunity to serve in that type of a unit, a metropolitan division. That's like the special forces of the LAPD. It's where the SWAT and the K-9 are, and you do dignitary protection, like you mentioned. So anytime the president, vice president, first lady, or any head of state came to Los Angeles, we'd work with the Secret Service or the State Department. So not only was I exposed to strong leadership and high standards of performance within the LAPD, I was exposed as a result of working these specialized units to my counterparts at the federal level and other organizations. So I could compare and contrast things. And I was fortunate to work with the absolute best. And with that exposure and that mindset, it's what you carry with you. And it's what's interesting is I promoted out of Metropolitan Division. I'm made sergeant out of there. And I went to the Rampart. I was selected to go there. And if you know anything about Rampart, we had in the late 90s, the Department of Justice was investigating the LAPD. And as a result, we went under a federal consent decree. And it was the real reason behind it was the Rampart scandal. The crash gang unit there was unbelievable corruption. Officers were committing bank robberies, stealing pounds of cocaine out of evidence lockups, selling it on the streets for their own personal profit. They were getting involved in unjustified shootings on duty and, you know, planting evidence and things of that nature. The most egregious corruption in law enforcement that you'll ever see. So I was promoted and selected to go there. And then after being there for a while, I was then selected in a competitive process to be the officer in charge of the newly formed gang unit. It was a gang enforcement detail because they went ahead and disbanded all crash units citywide because of the corruption scandal. So that was my largest leadership challenge. Because when I left Metropolitan Division, I got used to being around working Metropolitan Division, those who had the same mindset that I did, the desire to achieve excellence, not just to be competent or to be mediocre or just do the minimum amount to get by, but to excel at your fullest potential. And then when I went back out to patrol, I realized that I could not impose that type of a standard on the officers that were out there, because that's not across the board what you have in law enforcement in general. That's not the mindset that you have, unfortunately, but that's the reality. But when I became the officer in charge of the Rampart gang unit, I was then able to pick my personnel. And I changed the whole dynamic by which I chose people. Prior to me getting there, you used to have to get a sponsor. Somebody that was already in the unit would sponsor you and say, this is someone we need to be brought in. And that wasn't going to fly for me. I was looking for something very different. I was looking for people that had the highest level of integrity, that were highly motivated, that perform at high levels in all aspects of their law enforcement career. And as a result, when I brought them in, I completely changed my measures of effectiveness. So I wasn't worried about how many arrests officers were making. That wasn't something that I was all that concerned with. I was more concerned with, if you made an arrest, what were the filing rates? What percentage of your arrests were being filed? What were the conviction rates? How many years of prison were these gang members getting? Those were the things that were important to me, because you can make arrests all day long. If they're not being filed, the cases aren't being filed, you're not having any impact whatsoever. You're wasting your time completing the paperwork related to that stuff. It's all about reducing the incidents and fear of crime. And if you're not being surgical in your enforcement methods, then you're not really achieving anything and you're spinning your wheels. And I had to change the entire mindset of that unit. But really, we were recognized, we got the meritorious unit citation for the LAPD, and we're recognized as the exemplary model to be, you know, emulated by other gang units throughout the city.
Yeah, and I'm hearing a lot of metrics and efficiencies that you were bringing to the table. And I'm thinking, you know, obviously as a business-minded person, that a lot of this really applies to business. So fast forward now to today, you run Law Enforcement Consultants. What leadership challenges do police departments face today? How do you help them now? Because you're now running a business and you're taking a lot of those philosophies that you kind of brought with you to your unit, and now are running your own business with that. Now you can kind of help and advise as you're seeing this as a business, right? And I love kind of what you were saying too about how you were choosing your team. I have philosophies in hiring. I hire for the person and for their values, and we train on skill set. And that's just something that we have in our model. And we do that when we're hiring for our clients as well. And that's why we're different. And it's not for everybody. Not everybody can get bought into that type of philosophy or mentality or business model even, because it may not always be the best business model or on paper, right? And especially with your financials. But you're talking about, you know, arrest rates and wasting time, basically. What are you doing? How effective are you at your job? Those are all business practices that I can imagine are very, very helpful now in what you're doing. So talk about that and how that applies to how you consult today.
Well, my experiences with the LAPD gave me a great deal of insight into the management best practices for law enforcement, because ultimately, the consent decree, which the LAPD was under for 10 years, is a blueprint of the management best practices, which should be implemented in every law enforcement agency nationwide to achieve the optimal outcomes. It's really about reducing liability. And it's not just liability for the city, but it's liability for your officers, reducing the stress of officers. You know, more officers kill themselves by suicide every year than are killed in the line of duty. And we need to make sure that we're better taking care of them. And that involves training them properly, ensuring that they have the tools and the means and the ability to be successful in the challenging incidents that they're going to be required to manage and make critical decisions in. And it's about enhancing operational efficiency. That's what it's all about with my company, and ultimately maximizing outcomes. And one of the examples I'll give you real quickly is that 36% of officer-involved shootings involve an individual who's suffering from a mental health crisis. And the reality of this is there's over 18,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States. Only 15 to 18% of those agencies provide their officers with training relative to mental health crises. So how are we going to expect our officers to be successful in those outcomes and minimize the necessity necessarily to use force and the optics of using force? If we're more in tune with the science and the data and the research and empirical evidence, and we train with that information and knowledge, we'll have more optimal outcomes. We'll have less bad optics that cause citizens to have negative perceptions of law enforcement. The reality in law enforcement is only about 20% of people 16 or older throughout their entire life will have a personal interaction with law enforcement. The remaining 80% of people are forming their opinions based on the optics of what they see in the news, and law enforcement needs to control that. They need to control that narrative. They need to find better ways. And that's what my company is all about. And the challenge, like you said, is that people see me as the bad guy, because people think reform, we're broken, there's nothing wrong with us, that kind of a thing. And that's not, I don't like to use the word reform. It's about reimagining policing. How can we just do it better?
Yeah, that is so good. And I think there are so many things that I want to get into more, and we are just out of time with that. You have such a breadth and wealth of knowledge and experience that is so, it's really cool to kind of hear your perspective on that. And I grew up in Southern California, so I was thinking about the time frame too. And oh my gosh, just, I know what it was like then. And being in San Diego, I was adjacent to a lot of the things that were going on growing up, but yeah, I mean, I was close enough, and we had a lot of friends and family there kind of in it. And so when you were talking about some of these things, it really hit home. And I'm so glad to hear your perspective on that, because you don't really ever hear that side. And that's something, you know, that you're talking about, and I know that you're doing with your company. I have one last signature question that we ask all of our guests, Jeff. What do you believe it takes to be successful in business and in life?
You know, it goes back to something I mentioned that I feel my parents instilled in me as a young man, that you have the courage to be passionate and then strive to achieve and do things that demonstrate that life is bigger and greater than you alone. And that's really what it's all about. And if, when you have that driving force, you can achieve anything.
What an insightful conversation. Your journey from overcoming personal challenges to leading in one of the toughest law enforcement environments. It's a powerful example of resilience and leadership in action. And for those listening, if you want to learn more about Jeff's work, you can check out his company. Jeff, where can they find you or information on law enforcement consultants?
Well, you can go to lawenforcementconsultants.com and you can just hit on, you know, who we are and the services we provide and learn more about our company. I also have a forthcoming book. It's called On Thin Ice. And basically what that is, it talks about my unique personal background, my professional experiences, and my practical insights that lead to the suggestions that I give relative to the actionable solutions moving forward in the 21st century for law enforcement to be successful. And you can get on a waiting list. If you just go to jeffweninger.com, you can go to the waiting list, put in your name and your email address, and you'll receive email, and the book will be released this spring.
Thank you for saying that too. Yeah, On Thin Ice. I saw that in the background. I meant to ask you about that. Thank you for bringing that up. You can also connect with Jeff on LinkedIn. I'll have the links in the show notes as well. So if you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the show. It really helps us reach more listeners just like you. And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Thank you so much, Jeff. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. We'll catch you next time on What It Takes.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.